I want you to imagine something with me for a moment. I want you to imagine you're standing at an intersection, kind of at the corner, and across the way, you see a blind person crossing the street towards you. No big deal, except for the fact that you also see a delivery truck coming from the side. And very quickly, you can tell that the blind person isn't aware of the delivery truck, and the delivery truck isn't aware of the blind person. And in kind of one of those moments of video game analysis, you realize very quickly that that truck is going to hit that person unless something changes. So you're standing there watching this go down on the edge, and you realize quite quickly, too, that if you would just step out, grab the blind guy, move him out of the way, this could all be avoidable. So that's the moment I want to put you in. You're sitting in a moment watching a tragedy about to happen, something that you could actually stop if you just intervene in some way. So the question I want to ask is, if you're in that situation, what do you do? I don't mean like, this isn't a trick question like, what's he going to tell me to do? I mean, in those moments, what are the feelings you're feeling? What is it you're thinking about? You see a tragedy about to go down, you can stop it. I think probably all of us would help, right? It's the natural reaction. If you see another person in tragedy, you want to step out and do something, especially if you can. Each and every one of us seems to have this power to be able to make the world better. And when we see situations around us where we can use that power, we want to. We have the power to change people's lives all around us. From the people we know, people we meet around the street, I think people thousands of miles away, people in Guatemala. We have the power to make people's lives better, to avoid tragedy, even across thousands of miles. Do you know that there's something that causes more deaths around the world than starvation? I had no clue. And when I say more, I mean starvation causes about 10% of the food-related deaths in the world. This causes 90%. And the problem with this one is it's known as the silent killer because people don't really look very different. It's hard to identify them. You know, we're used to seeing the swollen bellies of children in Africa or the skeletal look of somebody who's been in a concentration camp. These people don't look much different than us at all, but they're dying all the same. These people are dying from what's called chronic malnutrition. And when I say chronic, I mean this problem has been going on for generations. Parents passing this to children who pass it to their children and on and on and on. So they don't even realize that they're dying from it. It's just the way life is. Stats say that the country of Guatemala, there's anywhere from 65 to 80% of the kids in the rural area have been physically handicapped already by chronic malnutrition. Like one in five kids is healthy, that's it. Four out of every five kids is physically stunted, mentally stunted. And that's where chronic malnutrition is different from starvation. See, starvation usually is caused by some sort of environmental shift. An earthquake happens, what produces the food in the area dries up. They need food. We kind of fly in food very quickly. It's there for a season. After the end of the season, that kind of food generating process kicks in again, and they can keep going. Droughts, tsunamis, earthquakes, things like that. That's what causes starvation. It's easy because we have the technology to fly food in quickly. But it only needs to be there for a little while. Even though it kind of looks good on the news, those are the kind of ones we want to be a part of, right? You know, we come in, heroes, save the day, fly back out again. Chronic malnutrition is pretty different. I want to quote something I read this week that shows you the impact of chronic malnutrition. You can read it with me. Malnutrition stymies cognitive and physiological growth in the first 1,000 days of life, from a mother's pregnancy through her child's second year of life. This irreversible stunting dooms children to repetitive illness, inhibits them intellectually and physically, and ultimately reduces their productivity as adults by roughly a third. For society, this adds up to a dire scenario. Results from the recent UNICEF study show that chronic malnutrition costs Guatemala $8.4 million a day in reduced productivity, hospitalization, student failure, and repetition in the first 3 years of primary school. $8.4 million a day. That blew me away. How is a country, any country, but how is a little country like Guatemala supposed to break the cycle of poverty with that going on? To put it in our terms, chronic malnutrition changes the physical bodies of children so much so that they can't fight off disease anymore. They're weaker than their healthy counterparts, significantly smaller in size. And most importantly, their brains are so negatively impacted by the lack of nutrients that they don't develop, making children significantly lacking in the cognitive abilities that could lead them to breaking the cycle of poverty. That's what chronic malnutrition does. It so handicaps children physically and mentally that they can't get ahead. They can't break the cycle of poverty. And when they grow up and they have kids, it's even worse for their kids and their kids' kids, and on it goes. So we could focus all of our attention against starvation, and we could impact about 10% of the food-related deaths in the world. Or we could focus our energies on eradicating chronic malnutrition, which accounts for 90% of the food-related deaths. It means 9 children out of 10 who die because their bodies don't have enough nutrients die because of chronic malnutrition. And the tragic thing is, chronic malnutrition is totally preventable. It's totally preventable. It can be fixed. And once it's fixed for one generation, it's fixed and it starts to spread to the next generation, the generation after that. Just like chronic malnutrition dooms future generations, so when you can fix it, when we can intervene, we can impact future generations with what we do. So remember how I started this? If you saw a blind person crossing the street on the path of an oncoming truck and you could pull them to safety, would you do it? I think that's where we sit with chronic malnutrition. Guatemala has the 4th highest rate of chronic malnutrition in the world. It's the closest to us in the top 4 countries. So it's not like it's on the other side of the world. It's not like it's in Africa someplace. This is like our neighbor. It's down the street from us. And they're like the blind person crossing the street, oblivious that chronic malnutrition is about to destroy them. And we have the power to pull them to safety, to show them what chronic malnutrition is doing to them and to their children. How it's killing not only this generation, but future generations. So I didn't go to Guatemala this year. Someone had to stay back. So I can only talk to you basically as one of you, from a point of view here in Canada. But from the research I was able to do this week, this is a huge problem in Guatemala. And I gotta say, I believe we are tackling the right problem in the right way, in the right area. But Carmen and Jeff and the rest of the team, they were there. So I want them to come up right now and tell us what they saw in terms of how this cycle of poverty, of chronic malnutrition, is impacting Guatemala.
Vince, it is good to be home. Still battling a little bit to fight the bugs that we pick up down there and stuff, but it's just a little taste of what they experience on a daily basis. Good morning, my name's Carmen. I'm the student ministry and Reaching Your World pastor here at Friends Church. 5 years ago, we set out as a community to find a way that we could make a difference on a global scale and have a huge impact. And that's when we started on this journey with Rio Azul. Last year was my first time going, so this is my second trip. But last year, I can remember the day we loaded in the van that we were driving to Rio Azul for the first time. And I was excited. I didn't know what to expect. I had seen some pictures and heard stories, but it's kind of like that first date. You know, the heart's beating a little bit, and there's this anticipation about what's going on. And so I'm glued to the window of the van and just taking in all the sights. And Guatemala is a gorgeous country. I mean, it is lush. It is green and mountainous. It was beautiful. So we're driving, we drive down into this valley and start to climb back up this mountain. And the van starts to slow down and we're informed, hey, we're here. And I'm looking around and there's a school off to the left. And we climb out of the van, and I start looking around, and I notice, look, the only paved road in this whole community is the one we drove in on. It's the highway. And if you were to take a right or a left off of this thing, things change drastically. You'd see mums. That's a picture of Guatemala. You see mums carrying stuff on their heads, kids strapped to their back, kids playing at the school. And it was like something I hadn't seen before. Like I was saying, you step off the main street, and it was like stepping back in time. These roads were dirt, and you didn't have to look far to see something unique. There was a store on the corner. And when I say store, I know you're probably thinking 7-Eleven. Think your kid's lemonade stand, okay? You've got a couple shutters that open up. You've got some pop and chips, and then life's basic necessities like toilet paper and Imodium. Very bare bones. There was a smell in the air like campfire, and you didn't have to look far to see a home. All the homes was smoke kind of just rising out of them. We're talking homes that are 200, 300 square feet, dirt floor. You could see through the boards to the outside, no real door other than like a curtain, an open fire burning in the house. Pretty much everyone was making their way around on foot. You'd see the occasional horse loaded up with gear, and they'd be hauling stuff around. And it was weird. There was something hard to describe, but there was this feeling in the community, and you could get a sense of it really quick. But there was this connectedness. Community seemed to really matter. People were talking and sharing time together. You'd see people smiling, and they'd walk by and make eye contact with you. The dads were heading off to work. You could see them walking with a hoe and a machete. That was very normal. Kids running around with machetes, you know, like all the moms on the team were going, what is going on? There's like 5-year-olds running around with machetes. A number of the dads would have to leave Rio Azul to go to work. So you'd see them jumping on a local chicken bus. This thing is like a school bus that is just pimped right out. It was these things. I don't know what kind of motor was in these things, but they would fly. They'd pass you like going Mach pace. It was scary. When we got off the bus, it was very obvious we were not from around there. The color of our skin, our height. I mean, that was one of the things that stood out to me right away is I was a freaking giant. Most people were up to my waist. When you're talking kids, it was like, if I didn't duck down onto my knees, my head wouldn't have been in any of the pictures on this trip. Over the course of the week, we met a ton of people. And it was neat to be in the community and spend time with them. But there was a couple people that really stood out to me. And so when we went back this year, I was looking for them. The first one was this lady, Feliciana. And this woman is a rock star. I got to say, the team kept saying, how many Felicianas is there? Because she was everywhere. We'd be out in the morning and we'd be working down at the work site hauling rocks. And she would have been there before us. She'd have this bag on her head carrying 50 pounds of rocks, in and out, getting the rocks to the project that we're working on. And every time she'd come by, she'd just share a smile with you. And then she'd keep working. We'd leave, go do some interviews, do some other stuff. And we'd be at a kids program. There's Feliciana. She's like organizing the kids. The day we pull up, we're at the leaders, all the leaders of the community come out. And this has typically been a guys' club. But Feliciana's there. And she is a voice that will be heard. There's a group of ladies who sell candles. They're trying to get this business going. Who, like, the person heading this up is Feliciana. She was everywhere. It was insane. So I was excited to see her and just to kind of touch base. The second guy was this little guy named Juan. We had met him out on the schoolyard my first trip. And this kid was a soccer phenom. I'm thinking, for a 5-year-old, this kid, like, one day this kid is going to be the next great thing. He could do things with a soccer ball that I had never seen. And so this year, I'm going, I know where I can find Juan. I'm going to the schoolyard. Sure enough, he's there kicking the ball around. Well, then later in the week, they're doing like a school, the kids are being called up by grade, and they're doing little productions for the team. And they call up the grade sixes. And Juan's with them. And I'm like, what is Juan doing with the grade sixes? Well, Juan's 12, not 5. And I'm thinking, okay, we got a real problem. And it really hit home the impact that chronic malnutrition is having in Rio Azul. But a lot has happened since we started working there. Some of you have been around since the start of the Real Zool project, and you've seen the different phases. Some of you are new. Maybe you're hearing about Real Zool for the first time. So I want to take you on a little journey and just show you where we've come from. So 5 years ago was our first trip. We took a team down, and they helped build a classroom on the school. And let me tell you, education is so important. When you're working in a situation like this where it's not relief, but you're trying to change a culture, education is one of the key pieces. We worked at sponsoring a bunch of kids. This is Juana. She's been sponsored almost from the start by our kids' friends downstairs. They raise money every year through the bake sale and things like that to make sure that she's sponsored. We've got Pedro, who Switch recently sponsored, and I had a chance to go visit. These kids are amazing. And sponsorship, let me tell you, a lot of you have sponsored kids in Real Zool, and it is playing a big role in helping fight chronic malnutrition. How many of you ever go to your tap, pour a glass of water, and worry that what comes out is going to make you sick? That's just not really part of our life, is it? In Rio Azul, that's a question they have to consider every day. So 4 years ago, we started into a big infrastructure project, and it was designed to bring clean water to the community. At that point, Rio Azul, the water was dirty. Dirty equals parasites. Parasites equals chronic malnutrition. And so I think one of the things in a project like this was really understanding the community's heart, what they need, what they thought they needed, and number one on their list was water. That was by far heads and tails above. We got to get clean water. And so we began by capping a spring. So they used to go up this hike up this mountain. It was 20 minutes if you were moving. And it was not like Bonas Park. It was a mountain and dirty, like slippery trail. They'd get up there. They'd have to load up water, haul it down. And this would happen 4 or 5 times a day. And so we capped the spring. And my wife says, what does that mean, capped a spring? They basically build an enclosure around the clean water that's coming out of the ground that prevents it from becoming contaminated. Next, there was like 2 kilometers of pipe that got laid from the spring to a holding tank, or the area where there was going to be a holding tank, right above the community of Rio Azul. And this is a big structure. And you think, this thing's impressive. They don't have cement trucks. They don't have cranes. All of this stuff is hauled up this steep hill, and this all built by hand. I mean, it is something. So we built the holding tank next, and that's what that was. From there, they can treat the water. I mean, there's clean water coming out of the spring, but they still want to treat it and make sure that no one gets sick. So there's chlorine gets added to that. It is cleaned out and washed regularly. From there, we wanted to lay pipe to each home. So the clean water would go from the holding tank down to each property, and on each property there's a tap where they have clean water. And I think this is one of the most important pieces. You know, it was one of those tough ones to kind of sell, but accessibility really makes it so the water is going to be used. Water has been one of the key components in starting this community on a path to fight chronic malnutrition. And along the way, we've been just trusting the process. You know, you start putting this stuff in, but you don't see results immediately. And so you're kind of, the celebration is, we built a holding tank. Yeah. We got pipe to people's houses. Yes, let's celebrate. But you don't know. You don't know how it's going to impact the community. Well, I am really excited to be up here and be the one sharing that we're at a point where we're seeing the results. And it is greatly affecting this community. The purpose of our team that went down, there was 8 of us, was really to capture the stories and to find out and hear about how the water is impacting this community. I got to tell you, we did not have to look far. The first, we got Joseph. He was the community nurse. We started talking with him, and he was talking about how there had been such a huge decrease in the number of families coming in to get treatment for stomach issues. And I mean, he was excited about this. He was talking about the kids that come in. They measure the kids and weigh them regularly, the kids that are between 0 and 5. And he said, it is incredible, the growth rate and the things that are happening just over a couple years of clean water. This isn't over generations. This is a couple years. He talked about moms coming in wanting education about breastfeeding and hygiene, things that they could pass on to their kids. I want you to check out this video of Miguel. He was the school principal. Miguel went on to talk about the number of kids in school compared to 2 years ago. Just because they're not homesick, the kids are feeling better, and in turn, they're learning more. And that's impacting the kids' outlook on life. When we were asking kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, this is a culture. The Guatemalan culture is very fatalistic. They do not look forward. There's nothing to look forward to. And these kids are talking about being teachers and doctors and being able to change the world around them. The principal suspects the school could grow from 385 to 500 kids next year because of the health, because of how much Rio Azul is thriving. It's a place people want to be. We actually had a chance to talk with the mayor as well, and here's what he had to say. It's a cool looking guy, eh? This guy is passionate about his community, and he sees them thriving. Surviving is a thing of the past. He sees the changes that are happening and knows that things are going to be different for his kids and their kids, and that excites him. We had a chance to talk with moms. There's a mom who heads up training for other moms, and they call this a cascade model, where they actually find key people in the community and they teach them something, and then it's their responsibility to teach six others, and then that find someone from that group and they teach six others. And they're teaching them how to plant gardens in their own little plots of land. They don't have much, but they don't need a lot. And so they're teaching them how to grow nutrient-rich vegetables, things like cauliflower and broccoli and these different things. And so they teach them, and then they go and show them how to do it. And so each of these families is getting access to the things they need to help make their kids healthy. There's a picture of these guys. Now, the two guys, sweet shorts, eh? They're like, that's the next phase in board shorts. The two guys on the right, 4 and 7 years old, these are kids who do not suffer from chronic malnutrition. That's the standard across the world for the height they expect kids to get to. On the left, you've got one of the guys from Rio Azul, 7 years old, and he's just taller than the four-year-old. We talked with Julio, the country director of FH, and he was excited. I mean, they deal with stats. They need to know that things are changing. And over the past 2 years, they showed a 7% drop in the number of kids between 0 and 5 that are under, like, these kids are reaching the averages. There's a drop in the chronic malnutrition, a drop in the kids that are under the height and weight that they're supposed to be. There's another picture. So these guys, these are three brothers. The one on the right's 14, the one in the middle is 12, and the one on the left is only 5. And you can tell he's had 2 years of clean water and food, and he's catching up fast. He's going to pass his brothers, no problem. We got to talk with a leader from Shangka. It's a little community about a 10-minute drive past Rio Azul. And to get into Naba, which is the city that's not far from there where a lot of them work, they got to pass Rio Azul. And they can see the change. They know something's going on, and they want to be a part of it. And you hear their leaders, we said, like, what's up with you guys? You noticing what's going on? Oh, yeah, our leaders are starting to pull together. We realize there's a problem and that it can be fixed. This isn't hopeless. We spent time playing with kids, and I got to tell you, it was a blast. Cheering them on, building trust, and building a bond between our community and the very lives that we're trying to save. It didn't matter where we went, who we asked. I mean, it was undeniable the change that's happening in Rio Azul. And I mean, it's happening on multiple fronts. It's not just the water, but everything is tying back into beating chronic malnutrition. We work with a fantastic organization in FH. These guys are rock stars, and they're making sure that our money and our time are going to the best use possible, and that change is happening. And it's not the kind of change that is going to last a year. This is change that's going to change a community forever moving forward for future generations. It was so exciting to see the progress, you know, all the infrastructure that's been built, but the change that's happening, and to know that our efforts are really making a difference. One day we're going to see this community thrive, and we're going to be able to celebrate with them, and we're going to be able to say we didn't sit idly by and say, you know what, this is someone else's problem. But rather, we work together to to take water to our world by taking on chronic malnutrition. I'm going to pass things over to Jeff here.
Thanks, Carmen. I've been watching because I haven't gone to Guatemala until this year. This is the first time. And I have to be honest, I knew in theory what we were trying to do, but this isn't relief work. We're not going in and boom and do a whole bunch of great stuff and then watch it all change overnight. And then we go, yeah, and we high five each other and we walk out and we say next. It wasn't like that. And year two went by and we're putting a lot of resources and time and effort into this thing. And I'm going, okay. And then year three and I'm going, okay. This is working, right, guys? You know, it was kind of one of those things. So I'll be honest with you, I went down with lots of questions this year and a little bit of skepticism. But after seeing what I saw with my own eyes and hearing the stories, we went in and interviewed, and not just Food for the Hungry leaders, but we went in and met with teachers and principals and home and mothers and the nurse, like everywhere we could, just to say, okay, show, tell us, explain this to us. Can you? What do you see? And after seeing it all, I gotta say, I am completely sold on what we're doing down here. Completely sold. I'm so proud of what is going on there. It's undeniable the life change is happening. However, even though the development of Rio Azul is producing some exciting results, and we do need to celebrate what has happened and is happening right now, it's important to recognize that we still have some critical phases left to ensure the ongoing long-term health and sustainability of this community. We've done some great things, but they are not out of the woods. You see, so it's exciting that we got them clean water that's safe and it's piped right into their homes. But what happens? You tell me, what happens when the water comes out of the faucet? They turn on the faucet and it comes out and they wash the bacteria off their hands. What happens to the water then? See, here in Canada, we don't have to worry about that because it just goes into the sink and out the drain and who knows where it goes from there, but you know what? It's not our problem, right? Like, it's done. And if there's anything, you know, it feels nicer, then we go, you know, and get like filthy, dirty, or your kids come in from playing outside and you say, wash your hands. And they rub all the grime and junk off, or you go in the shower and you, not our problem anymore. The water's off us, but down there, it's not that way. The water pours up the faucet, hits their hands, they wash their hands. All the bacteria that's on them gets washed off, but then what? It falls to the ground because they don't have drainage like we have. They don't have proper water treatment facility. So what ends up happening is the water hits the floor, and then it ends up, given enough time, it works its way, in many cases, out the door of their homes and out into the yard. And sometimes it pools in low spots, but then it eventually, given enough water, it'll flow out of the yard into the road. And it'll just keep running. You get a heavy downpour and that dirty, bacterially infested gray water, that water that can so easily make someone sick, mixes sometimes with overflowing outhouses and all kinds of stuff that we saw, animal feces, they got animals in most of their yards. It mixes with all of that and builds kind of a little ditch, sometimes natural ditch, just like water flowing through dirt. It forms a little, and it ends up pouring into the low spots in the community and often starts pooling right even in our circumstances, right near where kids are playing even. One afternoon, we're out playing soccer, and this is kind of, and for all those that have gone before us, this has become kind of a thing they look forward to. You know, us gringos don't know how to play, let's be honest. And so we're out there, and these guys are flying. We're having a great time with them. One of the kids boots the ball out of the schoolyard, land, bounce, psh, into one of these cesspools. And I remember running over there And I'm saying, it's okay, I got it. And there's a kid running beside me. I'm going, oh, I'll get it. And then I looked at where it landed. I'm like, and he beats me to it. And and I see him reach into that stuff and pull it out and spin that ball around. And I'm just like, and he drops it down on the ground and gives it a kick back into play, does one of these, and right back into there. The Food for the Hungry, the FH staff watching this whole thing just started now, picking out each one of our members of our team, saying, make sure you're using hand sanitizer. That ball is carrying some bad stuff. Make sure you wash up. Make sure you wash up. I couldn't help but sit there thinking about that little boy who wasn't having hand sanitizer passed to him after the game, who wasn't likely going to wash his hands until maybe that evening when he was coming in for supper, would likely make a stop at the local store and be eating some gummy bears and be doing a bunch of different things on his way. And that stuff on his hand was going to make its way into his mouth. Then I started thinking about the kids playing on the side of the road in bare feet, running through this stuff, having no idea what is on them. So it's one thing to get the clean water to them clean, so they're not putting the clean water in. But what we're realizing now is that gray water, that bacterial infested water, is perpetuating the problem. It's killing them. So we got to get it out of the village. Got to get it out. That brings us to the project. That's why this next phase, which is currently underway, is so extremely vital. It's the phase that will pipe all the ugly water that is coming out of the taps all over this village and all the sewage that is piling up. In the way that this town is built and so condensed, the gray water and the sewage is creating incredible complications in eradicating malnutrition, chronic malnutrition. So we're into this phase of getting it out. Hopefully this will kind of give you a picture of what it looks like, or just kind of a snapshot of the phase in process to build some water treatment facilities. Go ahead and show this. You've never seen people work so hard in all your life. I stood in that line as they were passing these pails. I think I was on the line for 4 hours. My back was like, felt busted. These people are doing this 8 hours a day. They are hungry to see this. They understand how important this project is. Digging huge pits that are going to build a whole septic system. These ladies, 8 hours a day, carrying about 60 to 70 pound bags of rocks on their heads down about a 300 meter trail from the rock pile to another rock pile with smiles. There's Feliciana, just so you know. You watch them hungry for this project. This is part of a two-phase project that is going to be able to get the wastewater out of the village to where it needs to be. It's located down below the village. So if the village is kind of up high, this is going to be trenched all the way down. They found a piece of land that the town has purchased, and they're building this whole facility. It's kind of part one of two that are needed, just based on the slopes of the town. They had to kind of work with the geography, so they know that it all flow down on one side. The town is kind of built on two angles. So one phase is going to deal with half the town flowing down this way, and the other half is going to be dealt with next year, going the other direction. So we did some research into this. The total cost of this two-phase wastewater treatment project is about $790,000. Which is a decent size of money. But this town has been campaigning with their province and with the country of Guatemala. And so Guatemala, powers that be, big government, has stepped up and said, okay, we can tell you guys want this. So they're forking out $611,000 toward the project. Pretty cool. But that leaves us about $179,000 to go. This is one thing that we learn about this kind of work that we're doing in Rio Azul. Different than relief work, this is development work. And the key to development work is not just doing stuff for the people. It's having them, getting them to get skin in the game. They need to be a part of this. And so the organization we're working with looked at Rio Azul and said, what can you guys do? So they said, okay. So they started pulling together their pennies, and they've committed $47,000 toward the project. $47,000. When you see what they live in, it blew my mind when I heard that number. Not only that, they're going to provide about 99% of the horsepower, the manpower, to do this. Feliciana and her women and the guys, we saw young kids pulling, dragging, carrying rocks. This village is saying, we will do as much as we can to shoulder that. So then the question was, what can Friends Church do? That left us with a price tag of $133,000 that we said, yep, we're on. We can do this. Over 2 years. We can do $135,000. That brings us to a total of $65,500 that we need to raise this year. But it gets even better. Because many of you were here at our launch when we came to B'nai. Remember that Sunday? For those of you that were here, we said, you know what? By you being willing to drive an extra 7 minutes, being willing to come and sit in comfy chairs, living like living in a country club here. We even blocked out the light for you this morning. Gee, we're taking care of you guys. But for being willing to do that, we were able to save a good chunk of money over 5 years. And we said the savings that we're going to accumulate by being here, we're going to make a difference in our world. Do you remember that? We're going to make a difference because it's not about us. It's about making a difference in our world. What we're going to do is we're going to take $30,000 from the savings this year, and we're going to direct it to this project. Which brings down the total now, right? We're going to commit $30,000 this year, $30,000 next year. $30,000 against $66,500 brings us down to $36,500. That's what we got to raise. $36,500. When you average that over a size of community that we have, and I just pulled a random number of adults that we think could contribute to this, and we're not, although the kids are not exempt, we'd love you to raid their piggy banks if we need to. We'd love them to raid their piggy banks because they can understand the importance of this. 225 adults, it brings a total around, let's say $175 if we round it off per person. Yeah, that's doable, isn't it? $175. For some of you, that's a night out. You who live hard. For some of you, it might mean giving up something, and I hope you consider that. I hope you would think about your tax returns maybe that are coming back. Because for some of you, it would be a stretch to do $175, but I know for some of you, you could do a lot more than that. In fact, $175, you wouldn't even know coming out of your account. So I'm not asking you for just to do the $175. I'm asking you to make a stretch gift here. So we can hit this target and more if possible. There's some people that have gone ahead of us. We're doing a big black tie dinner tonight. We're going to raise some money. Some people have coughed up some good money to eat some duck and some great lamb. Sorry, not duck. Lamb. We are going to eat like kings tonight. Some people have forked out some money. We're going to raise some money. Some people said, you know what? Beyond the ticket price. One guy wrote a check for $1,000. He said, let's get this moving and let's make a difference. There's a couple in our community, business owners. They said, you know what? Our company can do something. They got busy. They planned a silent auction and called on people within their industry to step up, to make a difference in Rio Azul. People who aren't a part of our community might never, ever come to Friends Church, but listened to the story and went, wow, there is something worth investing in. So they pulled together, amassed an amount of $5,000. And they're saying, you know what? We're going to offer this up as a challenge to some other business owners in our community who would be willing to do the same. Because we're not alone here. There's got to be other business owners that could do something. So you get people doing different things with their capacity. And perhaps there's others of you here hearing that story going, shoot, I could send out an email in my community and probably within my network of friends and raise that amount. That money's being offered up as a challenge. Would you take it? If that's you, would you do it? For some of you parents, would you go home and would you talk to your kids tonight about this opportunity and say, would you be willing with that $10? I was talking to my kid. He won a little money at a sporting event. And I just said, you know, Would you give a portion of that to change a life? He said, how much, Dad? The 36.5, we can do that like that. We can. So I'm going to ask you, what's your number today? March 10th, we're going to take the offering. And we're going to knock off this first phase. And I'm hoping we can knock off the second phase or get close to it. Because I'm telling you something. Right now, there's a lot of RSP companies out there that are campaigning for you to make an investment in their stuff in tax season. And they're promising you ROIs that are just out of this world. You're going to get 3% on your money this next year. Let me tell you something. You want return on investment? There is nothing like what I'm offering you right now that will pay dividends for years and years and years. So without apology, I'm saying you bring your wallets March 10th. Bring your checkbook, bring your credit. I don't care how you're going to pay for it. But I'm telling you, of all the things that you're going to spend this year, all the things, you looking back at your checkbook, at your accounting software, when you start tracking all the ways that you spent your money this coming year, 2013, you will look back at the investment you make at this and say, that was the smartest money I've ever made. Ever invested. I know that many of you likely won't get the chance to see these people face to face. I know that. Many of you will not get the chance to have them hug your necks like a few of us did, to hold your hands unprompted. Many of you will not get the chance to have them look you in the eye and say, thank you for what you're allowing us to become. But that is the most beautiful thing about this and about giving water, is because nothing screams more, it is not about me, than a project like this. Because they will never be able to thank you. Not enough. They'll never be able to pay us back. But that is the beauty of giving water in this world. It's saying it's not about me. It's about changing a world. Will you change your world in 2013? I'm telling you, we're making it easy for you. Just bring your checkbook, cough it up, and we're going to change lives. And I hope one day, and I'm even looking 5 years away with what has happened already in this 5 years. 5 years from now, some of you are going to go back and you're going to see Rio Azul thriving. When we are shaking the leaders of the city's hands and saying, God bless you. And we go on and we help another village. And they're going to say, hey, can we help you too? Help them? That is what this thing is all about. So, you've heard the story. I pray you will go and you'll tell your friends. You'll get them involved. I don't care if they go to church. I don't care if they believe in God. I don't care if they got money. You talk to them, okay? Because we're going to knock off the 36. I would love to see us raise 100,000 because I've never seen something work so beautifully. It is the best money you can invest. Right up there with Friends Church. God bless you. Can we pray and ask for God's wisdom and strength and blessing? God, thank you for opportunities like that, that we have to give of our lives. Because God, we do have so much. Help us to live in a way, whether it's Rio Azul or our neighbor or our wife or our kids or our employee. God, may we look for ways to just give away, knowing we can make a difference. God, as we rally together, may you help multiply this effort to eradicate chronic malnutrition, this evil that is totally preventable. May we're not signing up for the whole responsibility, but God, we can do our part. Maybe we'd be willing, and may you show us how. Amen. Amen. Have a great, great day, will you? Start thinking about your number. We're going to be asking over the next couple weeks. You're going to be tired of us asking, what's your number? But you can do it. And you can do more than even what you're thinking right now, I bet. Okay? Have a great week. We'll see you next week.